Hey guys, real quick.
Did you know that when the T-Rex breaks into the Explorer in the first Jurassic Park, the children's screams are actually real? The T-Rex and the animatronics used behind it were never actually meant to break the glass down. And speaking of even more cool things, did you guys know that we have a Patreon? That's right. You can find it at the bottom of the episode descriptions with all of the other links, such as all of our social medias and our website. We would love you forever if you guys wanted to support us on that Patreon, where we update our notes regularly and will begin to showcase a lot of special content that can only be found on the Patreon. Otherwise, I really hope you guys enjoy this episode.
Is, and hang, hold please. Mr. Blue, for the love of God, psst, come here. Get the fuck down.
I love that cat.
Come on. What the fuck? Absolutely not. There are no cats on the counter. I don't care how much
right now there are.
I left out. Fucking all day long, I've been here at work and they've been crawling around on the counter. And I'm like, dude. Like, all right.
But,
well, yeah. We'll get into it in any case. Oh, I guess we're already recording. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, how are
you? Hi, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
I am stupendous. It's Thursday and we're recording.
It is. It's a weird.
It's very odd for me.
It's Thursday. I don't know. I don't know what to say about that. It is the day
This is the schedule that worked out. White
people small talk. It is indeed Thursday.
No, I just like, it's usually like, it's, hey, it's Sunday and we're doing this or whatever. And I got to go make dinner. And it's like, oh, fuck, I got to work tomorrow still.
Yeah, that doesn't have any effect on the size of the glass of wine I brought, though.
It's very true. It does not. She did not skimp on her duties today, guys. But welcome, one and all. Welcome, welcome, welcome to... Oh man, divorces. I don't know why divorce is so funny on this show, but like, it just this. Oh my God. The stupidest fucking custody agreement I've ever fucking seen in my life.
Unbelievable. Just
yeah. Lindsay's note genuinely was just like, what judge in their right mind would ever let this happen? And I don't know. Only a Disney judge.
Only Disney can speak to the legal background of what happens in 1998's The Parent Trap, which we're here to talk about. I'm super excited. Thanks for joining us. Yeah. Like, share, and subscribe, all of the things.
Yes, please. All of the things.
Yeah.
Not only is this Nancy Meyers' directorial debut, which for those of you who aren't aware, she was a writer and a director for films such as It's Complicated and one of my favorite Christmases of all time, The Holiday. This is also Lindsay Lohan's first appearance in any major motion picture. She had done one short film before this. So adorable is our twinning heroine, however, that she actually did fake being sick to audition for this film. Which I think is hysterical.
What, like from her real school?
Yes,
like to go
from
to audition.
School.
She had to fake school or fake sick from school. That's funny.
That's awesome. Yeah, for this legal catastrophe, although, you know, strikingly heartwarming tale. Divorce is tricky. Okay, guys. Like, it just, it's just, it is what it is. Okay. And like, if you know what solves it, let's saw these children and this sibling issue in half. Basically.
Yeah, just split your kids. It's fine.
Yeah.
Honest to God.
Like, at no point is the kid ever going to be like, why am I an only child? Or I wish I had a brother. And then the parents are going to be like, surprise. No. You never knew this.
I have a great deal to say about that. So we'll come back to the absolutely unhinged custody agreement that is the premise of this story. But it is crazy. And yeah, based off of the Disney film of the same name from 1961, starring Hayley Mills, who was also not a real twin.
Not a real twin. Yeah. That's get ready for this shit, guys. We were spoiled by the two guys that played Fred and George later on. But
and I think, like, worth pointing out just here and not again, that this was like, for those who did not live through the year of our Lord 1998 or don't remember very clearly, this was peak Olsen twin time.
Oh, absolutely, right? It was.
They were a little young. They probably were. I think the Olsen twins are my age. I think they were probably like 10 or 11. Like they were pretty young. But this was peak Olsen twin. And I think it's an interesting choice, and it is absolutely a choice that they were not cast to do this. And I think it's because they had made so many twin movies. Like if you didn't live through that, like the Mary-Kate and Ashley Olsen had an unbelievable straight to VHS film repertoire. Oh, of yeah. Like crazy shit they did.
All the time.
I fucking loved the Olsen twins, and I loved Full House, and I loved every stupid thing that the Olsen twins were a part of. And
yep,
it is a choice that they were not cast in this film. But they're also, and this is true, folks, a lot less talented than Lindsay Lohan. So
100% agree.
That's that play here agree. Too. But I just want to point that out. This movie is notably not starring the Olsen twins.
Actual twins. Yeah. Weird.
But they were just so famous at the time. You know what I mean? Like there was a conversation in the room where it happened. There was a conversation.
No way. Yeah. There's no way that they're like, hey, what if we remade The Parent Trap? Oh, that movie about twins? Yeah. What about the Olsen twins? No, shut up.
Yeah, no shit. Don't do that. That conversation took place.
It totally did. It absolutely had to. Oh, God damn it. But instead they did Billboard Dad.
Or Brother for Sale, or that was a short. That was a short one. What was the one where they went on vacation?
Yeah, they go to Paris.
No. There was one there where they go to like the Bahamas.
Oh, I'm sure they go everywhere. Where they have to see a dude ranch.
That's all. The dude ranch one was good. Yeah. Aw, I loved the Olsons. All right, tell us who is part of this movie.
Yeah. So the film, as I had mentioned, is directed by Nancy Myers. It was written by Eric Caster, Nancy Myers, and David Swift, who incidentally enough was one of the original writers on the 1961 film as well, which is why this film bears so many striking resemblances, but does have a few key differences. Namely, that there's no random musical act. Yeah, there's a moment
you
where they're
telling me that I had some kind of
passed out.
Yeah, I was like, wait, back the truck up. Okay, yes, go on. Yeah.
Yes, for those of you who forget, and Lindsay was not aware of moments ago, the 1961 one features "Let's Get Together," which makes an audio cameo in this movie when Hallie is returning to the elevator. After meeting Meredith for the first time, she starts singing "Let's Get Together, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah." But that's all we hear. It's just the one random part. Anyway, starring Lindsay Lohan, it also stars Dennis Quaid as Nick Parker, Natasha Richardson, Rip, as Elizabeth James, and Elaine Hendricks as Meredith Blake.
Meredith.
Yeah, I have a lot of new things to say about her, by the way. Like, I've been having a discussion about her.
I'm so excited.
And then obviously, because I actually forgot how much, like how quickly I remembered the film score for this. There's a bunch of great music in this. But the film score was composed by Alan Silvestri, who we should remember from Avengers Endgame and Polar Express, just to name a few. But as always, because hers are always better than mine, Lindsay, could you please tell me what this is about?
I will happily regale you with a plot summary for this fucking madness. When parents of twins Dennis Quaid and Natasha Richardson get a divorce, they reach a custody agreement wherein each parent gets full custody of one child, and the sisters are never allowed to meet or even know about each other. Somehow, this movie is not about the judge overseeing this case being disbarred, nor is it about the girls demanding to be emancipated once they discover the truth. Rather, it's about the kids meeting and tricking their negligent parents to get back together. Be so serious right now.
Yeah, I actually like watching this and watching, like remembering their reaction and them being like, we've got to get our parents back together. I would have been 100% the other way.
Emancipation.
I would have been like, fuck these people. I'm not getting back on the plane.
Yeah. Emancipation. I would have run away from camp.
It kind of blows my mind that Hallie doesn't call Chessie immediately and be like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Like that they just are like, so we'll talk about it in depth, but genuinely, I didn't really think I was going to have that much to say about this movie. I was like, oh, what an easy fluff piece. As we say every time we think of like an easy fluffy nothing. And it's like, what the fuck? So
I want you guys to know before we go any further, I have a lot of random comments about like their time at camp. And Lindsay has disabused me of a lot of these incorrect notions that I had.
Scott was wrong about a bunch of shit. So I guess we'll like talk about that at the start after the timeline.
Yeah, after the timeline. But the one thing I do want everyone to know is there are basically two movies taking place here. There is a movie for the kids, which is the twins plot. And then there's the funniest fucking shit I've ever seen in my life that I completely forgot about. Martin is a G, and I would hang out with that dude forever. Their butler is funny as fuck. Chessie is the realest person in this movie. Oh my God.
I loved her.
The adults
have like a whole dramatic thing happening in the background of this movie. Yeah, it was a much more adult than I remembered it being. It's highly watchable. So
very, very. But yeah, let's get into the timeline after I tell you that you can find this on Disney Plus. Shocking, I know.
It's actually kind of – I didn't remember this was a Disney movie. Like I actually forgot too.
I was like, okay,
Disney Plus. Yeah, so Disney Plus. Let's go to the timeline.
It's still 1998, you know. Fantastic.
It is 1998. The first MP3 player is released in Japan. Sex in the City premieres on HBO. What was that sound?
Nothing. It wasn't a sound at all. I didn't make that sound. I don't know what you're talking about.
It wasn't the deep, deep reverence for the incredibly problematic show that aired on HBO between 1998 and like 2006.
Yes, you know me. I'm such a Sex in the City fan. Miranda all the way.
First of all, that's correct. Although, actually, it's Samantha now.
No, as I was going to say, it's mostly Samantha.
Yeah. These days, it's for a little while, we all thought that Miranda, everyone wanted to be Carrie when it was on. Mm-mm. And then we all realized that that's toxic. And everyone said, no, feminism, we should all be Miranda. And then
she's kind of a bitch. So it's Samantha.
No, it's not even that. It's just that we realized that we want to be liberated. So it's Samantha. It's like, Samantha became the, like, for a little while, Miranda was the definition of feminism, and now it's Samantha. Mm-hmm. So, anyway, nothing but reverence. Sex in the City changed everything for women on television. Don't even fucking come at me. Even though it's so problematic and I can barely rewatch it.
Yeah, I know.
It changed everything for women when it was out. Like, honest to God. Meanwhile, the final two-part episode of Seinfeld aired to 76.3 million viewers. This was huge.
It was a huge deal, guys.
And in the most
important, I love this. I love this so much.
Most important. Look, we got a lot of shit in 1998. We have a lot of time to talk about things that are serious and or real. in the year 1998, Voldemort was defeated at the Battle of Hogwarts. Unless you lived in the Manacled universe, in which case, sincerest condolences and empathy.
Guys, do you understand? For the last 2.5 weeks, this has been all my phone has been about.
I don't
get texts from any of my other friends or family. Like my phone, if I get a text from anybody else, Lindsay's text takes this over about how unwell she is.
So unwell over this fan fiction, you guys. If you haven't read Manacled, I highly recommend doing so before it's taken down off of AO3. Strong recommendation. And it turned out that secretly, basically every woman I know is reading this and nobody was saying anything about it. And now we're just all saying it. So,
I've been bringing it up to a couple of the people that I know and they're like, I'm done. I've read this. And I'm like, what the
fuck? For real, right? Like everybody, you should read it. It was so good.
You know my stance on fan fiction. I know.
Fine.
When we get to, I know.
Fine. The Parent Trap received 87% on the tomato meter and 70% audience score, which
this honestly
is so backwards and weird, but okay. Yeah.
This irritates me to no fucking end. It's like weird. This absolutely should be turned around. I don't get it. I understand critics could come at this and be like, wow, we're just remaking movies now because this is 98. We haven't really started doing that yet. Mm. But everybody I know loves this movie. Everybody I know remembers this movie.
It was remembers, so popular like, when it came out. Like, I don't understand the 70%. I mean, the 87 seems high.
That seems right on. But
closer. Yeah. Like, it's very strong.
But again, it is 98, so we're also coming into combat with Titanic and,
yeah.
Oh my God, a ton of other shit. So, like, I kind of get it, but no. 70 is just too low. 70 is just too low, guys. What are you doing?
Yeah, this was like, I don't know about all that, but anyway, for the second and, you know, by no means the last time, Shakespeare in Love is the movie from 88 that wins the Oscar, right? So, or I'm sorry, from 98.
It wins in 99.
It's wild. Yeah. So it wins in 99, but Titanic, of course, wins in 98. Frasier and The Practice with the big awards for the Emmys. And Titanic, of course, is the top grossing movie. Parent Trap brought in like 92 million worldwide, though. So it did pretty good.
Yeah. I think it, if memory serves, it was like a $10 million budget or something like that. It wasn't very big. I just remember. I think I had it. Or I could have sworn I had it. Yeah, $15 million. It cost $15 million to make this, and they made six times that.
Yeah, they did pretty good. Like, this movie was successful. I know I saw it in theaters.
I don't think I did. I think Mama bought it, and my sister watched it all the time. I just remember watching it all the time. Like, I loved the movie, but I don't think I saw it in theaters. If I did, my mom would be the only one that remembered taking me.
I remember coming out of the theater and being stoked and, like, wanting to know how they made it and being like, fully in love with Lindsay Lohan. I was obsessed with her. So let's talk about, well, let's finish up the timeline.
We have a warning.
We had a warning for the first time in a while.
Mm-hmm. Tobacco.
Hecky.
But I also just love that this is rated PG because of mild mischief.
Yeah, I enjoyed that. Rated PG for mild mischief. That's what they'll tell you on Disney Plus. And I'm like, fuck yeah, there is mild mischief in this.
Yeah, there is. That's kind of the whole fucking plot.
Yeah.
But like, yeah, it was kind of off the rails. And obviously we already mentioned it, but this is a remake of the original 1961 film from the same name, which is actually based off of a Greek play. There you go. There you have it. There you are.
No sequels, though.
No sequels, thank you. God, I don't know how you could possibly make a sequel to this.
You wouldn't. It would be garbage. It's
it would just be absolute dog shit.
I don't know what story you would possibly tell. So
I don't know why you wouldn't. Natasha Richardson's passed away. Like, you can't do it now. But let's go into the movie. So, like I said, this is Lindsay Lohan's first movie, but you would probably never know that unless someone told you that. Especially, and this was my first note, was holy fuck, dude, I would totally believe that she was from Britain.
Well, I wouldn't go that far.
I don't know, though. You do. I don't. She's 11. Correct.
That's true. No, the accent is not particularly great. It's not terrible. It's not terrible. It passes and it's fine. It's not very good. You certainly wouldn't be fooling anyone with it who has spoken to real British people. Like, it's not.
So Natasha Richardson's just kind of stupid, but her grandfather picks it up like right away, is basically what you're saying.
Yeah. Like, it's like pretty. What Lindsay Lohan does well, though, like, her accent isn't perfect, but it's consistent as fuck. And she does a great job of, like, you can hear her accidentally slip the accent in both personas.
Yeah.
So it's not just like she's accidentally fucking up her British accent. She'll fuck up the American accent. Right. Like, she does
as Hallie, it'll come out, or as Annie, her British accent will come out. And we see it when she freaks out and speaks French.
Yeah, which I liked. But yeah, but even though the accent itself, it's not great. Like, Lohan does a good job with it and keeps it consistent, and like, her baseline is solid. Like, she does a good job. It's not perfect, but it's good. It's impressive for a kid, and it's her first role, and like, she's doing great. I thought Lindsay Lohan was really good in this movie. Like, oh, especially as being a little kid in a time. I will remind you, we are but a few short years away from the catastrophic casting that was the Harry Potter films.
Oh,
so
I know.
We're just a hair's breadth from someone hiring Daniel Radcliffe. So just think.
Guys, I want you to know, too, that I've been talking about Harry Potter shit all day today. And we're in the timeline.
No,
with other people.
Who are you talking about?
With Anna and Chris.
I'm on Harry Potter bullshit. Why are you
excluding
me?
Oh, my God, I know. But I'm talking about, like, how I can't be on the Harry Potter subreddit because the Harry Potter, like, the worship that people give to Snape fucking irritates me, like, to no end. I just can't do it.
I'll tell you who we should be worshiping.
Malfoy. What a shock, you guys. No.
I would destroy myself for the version of Draco Malfoy that appears in Manacle. I swear.
I hope everyone listening has read Manacle so you guys can just enjoy what she's saying. And you're not sitting in the chair like I'm sitting in the chair.
Destroy myself. Like, oh, I cannot tell you how unhinged and hilarious the text threads I have with my girlfriends right now are. Like, it's because everyone is whoopsie reading this at the same time. We're all just, like, done pretending that we're not reading this stuff.
No one knew about it?
No, I think women in general are just, like, done. It's why, like, the fairy smut thing is everywhere, right? We're all just, like, done pretending that this isn't how we're spending our time. And I'm just
amazing.
Low-key, is everyone reading this? And they're like, yes.
Look, here, are we all right here?
I got a text this morning from someone I work with that was like, the things I would do to the... I was like, oh, my God.
I hate this so much.
Oh, poor Scott. Anyway, know. Sorry,
just, like,
go
I'm
on.
Glad that you, no, I'm just, I'm glad that you have something. But I just, I want you guys to know that we are in the timeline. We are 3 years away from Harry Potter. And it will be what I can only describe as the most polarizing episode we will probably ever do on this show. Obviously, we're going to set some very, very concrete ground rules. I may be sober as a fucking judge for that shit.
Why?
Because I'm going to get pissed.
You know, I think Scott should try weed for the first time. And that's
no, that's not. Nobody wants that. I think everybody wants that, actually.
I know I do, but save it for when I come visit you.
Yeah, I know. I'm not going to just like do it by myself. And Zuko's looking at me like, what the fuck are we doing?
It'd be so funny. But anyway, I don't know how we got on that topic, except that it's all I care about. Sorry.
Child acting.
Oh, God. Yeah. Child acting. Yeah. As I was saying, we are so close to someone thinking Daniel Radcliffe was a good actor. So I think that we got Lindsay Lohan here is like absolutely top-notch prime casting. Yeah. She did great. But I wanted to talk about like the other way that she did great here is by playing two people, right? So I want to talk about like how this was done because it's super, super interesting. Okay, so let's talk about how they made this because it's very cool. So it feels really seamless despite having very little CGI support. Like this is before mocap. There's no like it's done with like mostly practical tricks. So
yeah.
They do this all the time. Still today where the same actor plays twins. So like James Franco did it in The Deuce, which strong recommendation for The Deuce for those who haven't seen it. That was like did you watch that?
A long time ago.
It was on HBO. It was a show on HBO in 2018, 19.
That's what I mean. Yeah, I think I only watched it like one time. That might have been one of my, hey, I can't go outside. It's 2020. Let's figure this out.
Oh, yeah, it was on for like three seasons. It was really good. James Franco played twins in that. Lupita Nyong'o did it in Us, the Jordan Peele movie. Like a bunch of them did, but she's particularly awesome.
Yeah.
Adaptation, right? Nick Cage does it in Adaptation. Armie Hammer does it in The Social Network.
Social Network, yep.
Yeah. So like lots of examples of where they do this. And it's like, of course they do. Twins aren't that common, right? Especially who are also acting, so I get it, because we can't all be the Olsen twins. The original Parent Trap did the same thing. They had one actress for two people. So there's lots of ways you can do it. So you can do green screen and have a stand-in wearing a green screen suit. That's a little bit more modern. Parent Trap didn't really do that. Mm-hmm. Split screens is one of the big ones where they just mirror images. Like anytime where there's like a firm line in the scene, so like a window frame or the like edge of a bookshelf or something like that where you can easily split the frame in two. Mm-hmm. They do that a lot with it. And even rotoscoping, like in the old school Disney movies.
Yeah.
They've used to do this. So these days it's a lot of motion capture and like CGI stuff. But in the Parent Trap, they use a lot of like over the shoulder shots. That's kind of the most standard way to do this. They had lots of stand-ins for Lohan.
Yeah,
and they would just show one of their faces and another redheaded girl.
That was the one that that was what really stood out to me. That one more than anything. Like, and it's true, like throughout the majority of like when they are together, because you gotta remember too, like the majority of the movie, they are not standing right next to each other.
Right. They get it. This movie really lends itself to it because they're apart from each other most of the film. They don't actually have to deal with this very much outside of the first act.
Yeah. The most notable, like, I wouldn't give that one a pass, is right after they put the lizard on Meredith's water bottle and Dennis Quaid looks over and they're both hiding behind the tree. You can tell that they were superimposed into that tree. Like, neither of them are standing there. It's right. Just like they both kind of like folded over each other. That was the only time I was like, I don't know about that. But the stand-in, you only ever see them from the back of the head, but you can see Lindsay from a side profile. So you know that that's still like, oh yeah, they're the twins or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They do a lot of that. Like a lot of shots are over the shoulder shots in this. And she also had like earwigs with pre-recorded and like cue beeps in them and stuff so that she could hear her lines that had been recorded and like react to the missing Lindsay.
Yeah.
And so there was like a lot of practical stuff like that they did. They did have a blue screen in this as well. But it mostly they're doing these kind of like practical things with the doubles. But what they do in this that I thought was interesting that I didn't know when I started researching this is how much that movies that do this rely on motion control cameras. Which makes a lot of sense because you have to make sure that the shot is identical because you're going to do it twice, right? So if you're filming with like the way that they do it today and even for some of the Parent Trap shots, like if you're going to film something that's going to be a split screen shot or there's going to be like a body double in a green suit or something like that and you film both sides of the scene and they put the green suit together or the mocap together, you film it twice. So it has to be identical. So you can't do that with like a handheld camera. So they have to have these like motion control cameras, even in the 90s, which is pretty impressive tech, I thought, to make sure that the shot is identical both times that you do it. So I hadn't thought about that, so I thought that was kind of an interesting
little piece. I do really like that. And leave it to Disney to have this kind of technology just like up their sleeve, especially for such a like wild movie that you would otherwise not think like this is a technological revelation or whatever. Like they didn't need to do that. Like there's plenty of other, and they obviously couldn't have done that in 1961. Like they had to split the screen and shit. Like you see it, like I said, kind of earlier, but like you can see where they just like kind of like pasted the two scenes together.
Well, they do that in this version of the Parent Trap a lot too. Like that's if you watch like for the scenes where there's a lot of symmetry, you'll see like, okay, they're standing in the elevator, right? It's like spaces like that where it's like, or even when they're on another.
It's when they're laying in bed at camp and in the back of the truck.
Yeah, the back of the truck is what I was going to say, where they're sitting next to each other and they're just, it's like 50-50 and it's like this perfectly symmetrical shot. You cut it down the middle. So they're doing that in this a lot too, but they just like, it's well done for these like really practical effects. And I think it's interesting that they've like always done it this way and they continue to. Yeah, should we talk about the most unhinged parenting decision ever?
The stupidest fucking part of this movie. Yeah, just like the main premise. Like, okay, guys, for those of you who don't remember, the explanation given for why the girls are split up is Natasha Richardson would take one and Dennis Quaid would take the other so that they, quote, would never have to see each other again. Wild. That's exactly what she says to Hallie when she's unhinged. Packing them.
Unhinged.
Are you fucking serious right now that a judge was like, for sure. Yep. That is the most reasonable thing I've ever heard. Just why do they need to know that the other kid exists? Chessie knows and Martin knows.
Sure. It's insane. It's like, okay. Not only are they like, yeah, these kids don't need to grow up knowing they're twin. That's fine. Yeah. That's fine. Not only that, each kid gets to grow up missing a parent, which they both really hammer.
They were just fine with.
No, they're like, they're so pissed, right? They're like, both of them say to the other parent, like, well, I could use a mother. Yeah. And I have one. What the fuck?
Where are they at?
They're deprived their twin sibling. They're deprived one of their parents. And the parents are just cool with this. Like, they just were like, it's like, well, since I have a spare, I guess I only need to take one of them and it's fine. Like, you haven't been thinking your whole life about your other child. Like, I'm sorry. I don't think that's how it works, that you just are like, oh, I had two kids. Why don't you take one so I can never see you again? I'm sorry.
So this is where it really starts to fucking irritate me. Number one, how are you going to have a kid and then just be like, that's fine. I'll never see that one kid again, but I've got one that looks just like them. Might as well trick myself into, there's no way that they didn't just lay up at night going, I wonder what Annie's doing.
No kidding. And they both are like crying and like, oh my God, it's you. I can't. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
Like, you didn't, why did you put anyone through any of this?
The best part about this too is Aunt Hallie, who had been pretending to be Annie to see Natasha Richardson, tells her mom that this plan sucks. And Natasha Richardson's like, I agree. This totally fucking sucks. Not 2 minutes prior did this woman have the steel balls to tell her daughter that she's loved her whole life. No, you fucking haven't. No, you haven't.
No. Like, what the fuck is that logic? And then I'm like, okay. Then I get thinking and I'm like, they clearly don't think that their missing parent is dead. Right? That's very much not what they think. You can tell from all the interactions at camp.
They've definitely been told something about them. Like, it's not like, your dad died in a plane crash kind of thing. Like, it's like, they know that they were out there because they are allowed to have the picture of the parents.
And they're not like, oh my God, you're alive. Like, there's no comment about thinking that they're dead, right? So that, I think, is off the table. So what do they think? Like, there's also no indication that they think that they were abandoned. There's no animosity from either of the girls to their missing parent. So, like, what do they think is the reason that they're never allowed to meet this person?
And it, I think the idea to make it so that the girls were 11 years old is the perfect idea, because that's around the point where the kids are going to stop buying the reasons that they're giving them. Yeah, they're going to be like, what the fuck, dude? Like,
or at least start asking for a real reason other than just like, we're not together anymore. Like, right, but why, what the fuck? Like, why can't I meet them? Like, are they a bad person? Are they, like, that's the kind of questions you'd start asking around 11. And like,
yeah. But also, like, when they turn 18, are you going to tell them? And then now they're old enough to tell the parents to go fuck themselves and they never want anything. That's when you're like, you lost. Like, that's when it's over.
Yeah.
Were you just never going to tell them? Like, just, I don't get it. I don't get how anyone would think that this is such, and this is, by the way, guys, this is the exact same plot in 1961. It's not like they changed this from the original. That's the whole fucking plot.
Like, I get it. Maybe for Annie, you could be like, well, he was never really in our lives. So one night stand, like, don't worry about it. I'm your mom. Like, that's a very real thing. Sure. Maybe like, but
the Hallie one doesn't
turn around like that for Hallie. Like, so mom abandoned me.
Yeah. Like, that doesn't float at all. Like, no. And that's what it is.
That's like, that is, you know, and it's, I mean, it's just true. Like, That doesn't usually happen. It's usually the other way around. Like, I can see that argument for like, oh yeah, your dad just left us, or he never knew I was pregnant. You know what I mean? Like, that's a common thing. Like, he didn't know. He's not a bad guy, but I never told him. Like, that's not I know people who their real story
is. Oh, yeah. That. I have friends like that.
But, like, not for Hallie. Like, what the fuck must she think? It's terrible. And, like, I also want to add that the movie makes it very clear that the people who are the most emotionally impacted by this are the staff. Like, these are the worst.
Oh, my God. Chessie loses her mind when she figures it out. That's my favorite part. This is the best fucking scene in the whole movie. Is when Chessie realized that it's fucking Annie. That and right after that, when Martin is bawling his fucking eyes out on Grandpa's shoulder, and he's like, I've never been so happy in my entire life. Like, yeah, they care so much more. Because the
staff knew it was wrong to throw away one of your absolutely. Children. Yeah. It's like, what do you mean?
I want to drive this point home, though, because I rewound this because I thought I misheard her. We find out after Meredith has been dealt with and inexplicably disappears in the woods because she doesn't return with them, but her Beamer is still in the driveway. Fun fact, go look it up. It's still there. Elizabeth says she left. No, I'm sorry. It's when they are tricked into going into the remake of their date. The two girls put them on a boat.
Right.
Nick,
I'd like to point out not only their date, but where they were married. They were met and were married on the QE2.
On the QE2.
On the same trip. They had known each other. They sat next to each other. 17 seconds when they got married, but go on.
No, so that's part of this, actually. So they didn't know each other for very long. They got married. Love at first sight. Whatever. You're in love with each other. That's fine. They have one fight. And Elizabeth is like, I can't do this anymore. And throws it. First of all, nearly kills this man. Yeah, have one of my offspring. Take this hair dryer to the face real quick and bye.
Right.
Getting the hell out of here. The other thing, and this is strictly for Elizabeth, that the movie, I don't understand if this is like just poor writing or maybe I didn't hear it correctly, but the movie implies they have been wealthy this whole time.
Oh, they have a butler. Both obscenely wealthy. Yeah,
they're obscenely wealthy.
He owns a vineyard.
He owns I get that. Sonoma. But here's the thing, Napa. The thing. When Hallie asks Annie about mom, she says she's starting to get some notoriety now. She even just sold one of her dresses to a foreign prince. But Meredith knows who she is instantly.
Yeah, but Meredith is like hip to the scene. The kid's 11.
No, I know. But like, why is she making it seem like Elizabeth is just now breaking out onto the scene? Like, it's implied that she's been doing this for forever. Or she's got money.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Like, she's only just becoming really.
Yeah, like she's only becoming relevant. But the only thing I can think is that it's all Grandpa's money. Because we find out when they go on the boat. Grandpa's
money, yeah.
Well, he's the one that paid for the boat. So
plus they're British. It's all old money.
It's true.
That's like how that works.
Yeah, that's very true.
100%. No, of course she has money.
Well, Nick has a fuckload of money, dude.
Nick has so much money, and they try to pretend as though like
they're down to earth.
What is Chessie says? Chessie's like, he's not exactly Casanova. And I'm like, have you seen this guy?
Oh, she's like, we both know your father's not Casanova. He eats chili out of a cereal bowl. And I'm like, all bowls are cereal bowls. Like, there's no bowl just specifically designed for cereal. This man is loaded.
But also gorgeous and chill and rides horses on his fucking vineyard.
Property.
Like, I just, on his own trails and stuff. Like, I'm just like, I'm sorry. This guy's not a ladies' man or whatever. Like, fuck right off.
Dude, Hallie even says there's been a couple women, but they haven't lasted long.
Yeah.
Elizabeth is the one that's never had a dude. Never had a dude in that house.
Like, has anyone looked at Dennis Quaid? Like, give me a fucking break. Like, mm-hmm. It's very 90s, though, right? Like, we shouldn't probably.
He's to be a slob dad.
But No, I was going to say, are we doing She's All That? Because it's like the ultimate
one. Oh, we're not. No, but it's the same as like How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days kind of thing.
No, it's just this trope of being like, oh, they're not even pretty. And it's like, and it's mostly done for women. But like,
yeah, are we watching Dennis the same Quaid's movie?
Getting that treatment yeah. here where it's like, well, he's no ladies' man. And I'm like, he's not. Look at him.
What the
he's
fuck?
He's like a good yeah. dad. He has his kids flown dude. In on like the private oh. jet to Napa. Because let me tell you how much Napa Airways is not.
Oh,
like,
I know.
Like, I just, I'm like.
Here's the other part that really, really fucking irritates me. They're both great parents. To the kid that they have, like to the kid that they traded.
Just how like, do you come to that? How do you as a mother be like, you know what? That's fine. Take one of them. It's fine. I'm like,
what? I grew them for 9 months, but sure. Go ahead. What? Have the easy way out. Like, oh God damn it. Here. This is just going to lead me right into the camp thing. And I'm going to spend a lot of time at camp.
Let's talk about the world's most awkward meet cute.
The most ridiculous meet cute. First of all, this is what Lindsay has disabused me of.
Yeah, you want to tell me about how bothered you were by nothing?
I was like, what the fuck? That doesn't make any sense at all. Okay, so Annie lives in Great Britain, right? Hop, skip, and a jump across the pond. Fucking Hallie lives in Napa, California. Same continent. You could stay on a land vehicle and get there. The camp takes place in fucking Maine. It does. Right? Which Lindsay pointed out immediately. The first text I got from her when she started watching this was, of course it's Maine.
Yeah, I forgot that it's in Maine, but of course the summer camp's in Maine. All the summer camps are in Maine.
So that's where we go. My first fucking thought was, why in the goddamn fuck would someone from Great Britain go to summer camp in America where they're not going to know anybody? There's going to be no one around to help them. It just, like, I get the dad letting her go because it's like you're still in the country, and if he could, he could fly over there real quick or get her or whatever. Like, maybe he knows people out there. But that's so fucking random to me. That you would go to a different country for fucking summer camp.
Okay. I'm going to work backwards through this.
I'm sure
we are. First of all, it is actually a shorter flight from London to Boston than it is from San Francisco, if not the same, depending on your tailwinds. Second of all, they're all fucking loaded. They can be there in a second.
Yeah. Right?
Like, that's not a problem. Or at least it's the same problem, right?
Well, yeah. As soon as I said that, I was like, that's not a big deal.
You're just as far from, you know, if you're in Boston going to camp in Maine, if there's truly an emergency, it's honestly not that much quicker to get up there because it's still a fucking 5-hour drive. It's like a 6-hour flight to Boston, or if I guess you could fly into Portland. Honestly, you're between 5 and 12 hours from fucking Boston or London trying to get up to some parts of Maine.
Yeah.
Like this, it's
just not, some parts of Maine.
Like it's only a difference of like the 5-hour flight, right? Like, and they're rich, they fly first, you know, they cut the line. Like you're not actually that far away. If there's an emergency, no matter where you are, you're less than 15 hours out from your kid.
Right.
So first of all that, second of all, there is no summer camp in the UK.
Yes, that was the thing that blew my fucking mind. Yeah. What does that mean? What do you mean there's no summer camp in the UK? What the fuck?
It's just not really a thing. It's a very American thing. And so British families, especially the ones with money, like send their kids to the US to go to camp all the time. I had a lot of friends in the UK who had come to the US for camp or who came for Camp America as counselors. Was even more common. Come as a teenager and be a camp counselor. Through the Camp America program. So I had friends who went to Texas and did this and all over the place, right? But the big summer camps in the US are in Maine. Like they're in New England. It's fucking gorgeous
out there, man. Are you shitting me right now?
It is gorgeous up there. I mean, not that there aren't summer camps all across the US. Like, of course there are, but like the really big sleepaway camps, much like the boarding schools, a lot of them are in New England. And it's very common for like people from all over the world to send their kids to New England camps, just like boarding schools, right?
Yeah.
Like my Kuwaiti friends all went to camp in Maine. We used to go, we would go like on weekends, like bring them stuff and take them out for ice cream and stuff while they were at summer camp when I was really little and like too little to be at camp. I would go up to Maine to where my Kuwaiti friends were in camp and we would pick them up and we'd go out for ice cream and stuff. Yeah. Like we'd take them out of camp, right? Because they're like stuck at camp for like all summer. Right. It's like an 8-week sleepaway camp. Like some of this shit is like, they're there for like 2 months. This is what I'm saying. Like those camps, correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, but like, I don't think there's like 2 month sleepaway camps in most of the rest of the country. Like it's like much more of a New England thing than it is.
There definitely wouldn't be any in any of the states that any of the two states that I've lived in.
You would fucking die.
No, just kidding. There are a couple in California.
California, there might be.
Yeah.
But she's so rich, it makes sense to get sent out, like go away for the summer, go to this new place, do this other thing. It's not uncommon, I guess is what I'm saying. Like, just like if this were a boarding school, New England's kind of where all this old-timey, like, America shit happens.
No, and I now that you've explained it to me, it definitely makes more sense. The one thing that seriously, like, pisses me off, though, like, the one, it's still, like, I just don't get it. Of all the camp activities that you're going to have, of all the things that you're going to let these girls do, fencing?
The fencing
really?
Was weird.
What the Although, fuck? Although,
I knew an uncomfortable number of people growing up who fenced because it's New England. I had a friend who did it. I never took lessons, but yeah, fencing. I guess I thought that was a little something as well, but we did get to see Lindsay Lohan do that like sick cartwheel over a hay bale or whatever.
Yeah,
like,
that
obviously
was pretty
showing
rad.
Off like mad skills. When I was 10, I was like, oh my God,
yeah, look how cool she is. Yeah.
Look at her go
here. So the fencing thing is the crux of this meet cute, right? It is the catalyst that gets the two of them together. And here is where I'm going to spend the majority of the time.
Wait, you know why fencing? I'm sorry, I'm going to interrupt you. You know why fencing? Because you wear the fucking mask.
I know, and I get that. That's the only thing they could have done.
I'm like, of course. No, that is why. It's only for the meet cute.
It's the only way they could have interacted
like that.
They don't
see each other's faces. They only see each other's faces after they finish.
After they make them face each other.
That's like their moment. They like turn around to shake hands and it's like, oh my God. But anyway, go on. Sorry. That just clicked for me. I'm like, it's not actually too random. It's plot.
I understood that. I understood that they had to have a mask on or whatever. But like here's where I'm going to spend a shitload of time is like the what the fuck is happening at this camp level shit, right? Number one. We see Hallie make friends the minute she gets there. The nerdy girl with the glasses who's talking like, you never been here before. I guess you better grab your shit like really quick. And then the tall girl who is my reason for being into goth chicks picks up the bag. Dude.
I saw the most fucking hilarious meme.
Is it the one where she's like, my obsession with goth chicks started with the chick from Parent Trap?
I think it was my bisexuality started with Parent Trap. He's like, what's your first girl crush? The one who pulls the bag out of the pile in the Parent Trap?
Absolutely. That's exactly who I'm talking about. By the way, guys, neither of these two girls have names. They are never addressed by name.
No, it's just that girl at camp. But yeah, no, I thought that was so fun. I saw that meme.
She makes friends with these two girls. Annie just has two random friends. She's just talking to these two random girls. That's whatever. The minute that these girls get put into the isolation camp, I shit you not, we never see those girls again.
Oh, no. They don't have any other friends after that. They found their twin sisters. I wouldn't talk to anybody
else. No, I get that. But they are the most fair weather friends I've ever seen in my life. They're gone. They just plotted this fucking wild booby trap cabin and their friend got in trouble, but they didn't. I don't get that shit.
Yeah. They do like a full Kevin McAllister on each other.
They so
like
do.
This is where there's like the beginnings of the mild mischief that we're getting. The PG.
Yeah. How did they get the beds on the cabin? How the fuck did they get the beds up there?
That didn't make sense. They have a full Kevin McAllister thing and then they get sent to the isolation cabin, right? This is their punishment is to be sent to and there's an isolation table.
Yeah. They're completely separated. They're ostracized from everybody else at camp. Not only are they ostracized from the rest of camp, it's not just like a small amount of time. This cabin is completely unkempt. It's falling apart. It's raining in there. not only that, you get a very strong implication that they are no longer allowed to participate in any reindeer games. Like,
yeah, like it's over for them.
Their camp is done.
I'm not sure their friends are fair weather friends, or if they're like forbidden from, like, these two are being like
they
fully
might be, like, completely separated from everybody. Yeah, yeah, dude,
it's like no one speak to them.
It's like, I and that's the part that I'm just like, that is so fucking shitty. Like, first of all, why would the camp counselors not call their parents immediately? Second of all, the magnitude of collateral damage that is created by the fucking Kevin McAllister cabin is mind-blowing to me. This fight is between Hallie and Annie, and not only does she get Annie super hard, she gets all five of the other girls in this cabin in some way, shape, or form. And it's like, fucking why, dude? What did these girls do to you? Which leads me to the meet cute portion of this. This is all set up for this comment. Hallie is a raging bitch in the beginning of this fucking movie, dude.
It's amazing.
It's crazy. She takes the mask off and she's like, can't you see it? Everyone's seeing, like, we look identical. And Hallie's like, look this way, look that way. Your eyes are too close together. And it's like, how are you going to fucking ridicule the person that looks just like you? All because you got pushed into the watering trough? Like, shut the fuck up right now.
My favorite part, though, of like their rivalry and all of the things is when, first of all, they both play poker. And then Hallie shows
up poker
with a sock full of quarters. So
she's ready to beat the shit out of her?
Yeah. Like, and they're playing with nail polish and $5 bills. And, like, it was just the best moment of my life. And, like, do you want to give your fun fact about this poker game?
Yeah, I do. I really fucking do. Okay, so first of all, the show sets this up pretty well, actually. Martin gets gets Annie a brand new deck of cards, and says, like, maybe there's someone here that can whoop your tush at poker. And Annie's like, well, I doubt it, but we'll see. Implying that they play cards a lot. So she knows exactly what she's doing. This isn't like a I just learned kind of thing. And then Hallie sets this up when she asks the girls that she meets, do either of you know how to play poker? And both of them say no. And to which, this is another reason why I'm like, wow, Hallie's kind of like a scumbag. She immediately asks these two girls that just helped her, how much money did you bring to camp? So all of that sets up to this poker game, right? That comes down to them, like, it's Annie versus Hallie, Clash of the Titans, right? Fucking nothing like this has ever been seen again, or will be seen again. Oh, Annie gets a straight flush and Hallie gets a royal flush. I'm going to read to you guys the statistical likelihood of both of these things happening. To get a straight flush, the odds are 72,001. Hallie getting a royal flush is a 650,000-1 odd. The odds of the two girls getting these two hands is nothing shy of 46, almost 47 billion to one. That's more poker hands than have been played at all of the major casinos on the Las Vegas Strip over the past 100 years.
Is there any documented, like, this a poker game where this happened?
I fucking doubt it.
Probably not, since the odds are 4 billion to 1.
Yeah. To put it even further in perspective for you guys, the odds of you winning the lottery are 14 million to 1. Like, you have almost a 4,000% more likelihood of winning the lottery than these two 11-year-olds duking it out on their bed for fucking poly pink nail polish and that $5 stack. I just want you guys to know that.
Unbelievable. Like, I loved this. I loved their rivalry. I loved the Union Jack over the cabin after they put
that was hilarious. That was my, like, favorite part, dude.
Yeah, that was really good. And I also just like how I'm fascinated by the like real stories of twins who are separated at birth, which is a thing, but it's usually because of adoption and stuff. It's usually not. I don't know that it has ever been.
I don't want to see you ever again.
My husband so bad have one of my kids. Like, I just, that, I don't know that that is one of the true stories. But in true stories of twins who do get separated at birth, they do a lot have like these types of things in common, like poker, mm-hmm. like the way that they dip their Oreos in peanut butter.
The Oreos thing, yeah.
Like, that's a very real thing that happens to separated twins. There's even like a lot of stories, like a not insignificant number of stories of twins separated at birth who marry people with the same name, who do the same thing, who have the same job, who like literally down to like, there are many stories of twins who do all of those things, who marry women with the exact same name and have the same job and name their kids the same shit. Like, it's not an uncommon thing. Yeah. It's like, there was a Time article about it.
Like, I knew it happened, but I didn't know it was like they married the same name person or like they come with the same kid names and stuff.
Like, wildly similar lives, who just are like, they meet and they're just like, oh, so we're the same person? Like, what the fuck? You should look up this Time. It was like the cover of Time in like 10 years ago. Mm. And I don't know. It's like, but it's interesting how often this kind of thing really happens.
Here's the other thing that's like, this movie does a weird flip-floppy thing about showing their similarities and their differences at the same time, because obviously they have to learn to be the other person. And so we need to see that they have differences. Number one being the hair, her ears are pierced, the British accent. The one that I don't really understand was not covered is the one from Annie to Hallie. How did Hallie not explain her appetite to her? Because everything that that Chessie makes for Annie, she doesn't touch. She doesn't eat any of it. And that's the first fucking giveaway for Chessie. It's like, okay, it's
people
not.
People who actually fucking raise these kids, right?
Yeah. Who are going to fucking know, like, you love pancakes and you love chili. Of course you can eat it in your room, but you don't want to touch your chili. What is going on? And then again, that's it. All of this leads credence to Chessie being the first one to figure out who is really who. And that's why it's such a great scene, is like, she cares so much about her that she figured the fuck out.
Yeah.
The last thing I do want to say about camp before we move into the girls themselves is it does very strongly imply that this is not supposed to be a fun thing for them when they are being marched by the entire goddamn camp to the isolation cabin to the music from The Great Escape starring Steve McQueen. That song is literally used in a movie about being put in a Nazi isolation cabin. Like, you're not supposed to be having fun right now.
It's unreal. The isolation cabin. Like,
I don't get it.
It's an amazing plot convenience is what it is, but I'm all here for the idea that camps have that. No, they do not. And I went to the worst, most fascist, fucked up camp in the fucking world. I hated the camp I went to.
How did we not talk about this already?
Because I'm like exhausted even just thinking about it. Like, I hated the summer camp I got sent to in fucking, not quite in Maine, but like really fucking close to Maine.
Oh, that's why it sucked. It wasn't in Maine. New
Hampshire. It wasn't quite in Maine.
Oh my God. this should come as a shock to no one. But I did not go to summer camp ever. I was too busy being told to go play outside in 118 degree weather.
Fuck that all the way to death.
Yep. Basically almost got me there. But I learned how to ride a bike. I learned how to jump a bike and dirt and all that stupid shit. That's how I got bit by a black widow. All that fun shit. But I did.
I don't know that story. I don't want to know that.
That's fine. I did, however, go to both 5th and 6th grade camp. 5th grade camp was fucking wild. I wish I could tell you guys the absolute just unabashed preteen drama that went down. I met a girl there from another school, and I thought apparently I had a girlfriend at the time. Her name was Renee. Shout out, Renee, if you're hearing this. I want you to know that I remember everything about camp experience. No, not the one I dated.
Okay. I was like,
5th grade.
Back up so hard. No. Different Renee. Okay.
She's married now.
I was like, honey.
Yeah, no.
Stop recording and have a conversation.
No. Oh my God, that would have been tea worth spilling long ago. No I was chance.
Like, what the fuck?
No, so her and we had like, it was those like, it was one of those like things, and we sent notes to each other and all this shit. And I met this other girl at camp, and we were just talking or whatever. And I remember this becoming such a big fucking deal that I was talking to another girl that one of the counselors had to literally counsel my apparently sweetheart,
your girlfriend,
betrothed or whatever. Yeah,
the love of
it
your
was
life
apparently the love of my life. Yeah, it was insane. It was fucking nuts, dude. Sixth grade camp comes along because we moved to San Diego. This is where I meet Matt. I met Matt at sixth grade camp, and that was a great fucking time.
Oh, my heart. Hi, Matt.
Know. It worked out. Hi, Matt. It was great. I also met a girl in there. I think her name was Vanessa. She gave me her number, and I tried to call her twice, and both times she said she couldn't talk. And I was like, all right, I'll get the hint. That sucks. So, Vanessa, if you're out there, if you even remember any of that, I do.
Fuck you, Vanessa.
Yeah, that's hurtful.
You'd be ghosting people.
All you had to do is tell me you love me. All right. Like,
everything could have been different.
Dude, look where I am now. I
Of course. This will surprise you 0%. My camp was all girls.
Shocking to the high heavens.
I did have one of my first girl crushes at that camp, though.
Ooh.
Yeah. She was super hot. But
fuck yeah. Did she pull out your duffel bag? In one fell swoop.
Unfortunately, she didn't put I didn't get any such attention. I don't even remember her name. But I remember her.
Of course, that's how it should be.
Oh, Jesus. All right, let's talk about Hallie.
Yeah, the raging bitch of the two of them.
Yeah, she they act like she's, it's more like one of them's like snooty and uptight and one of them's like too cool, right? Like that's what they're going for. It's kind of coming across as raging bitch, but that's what they're going for. But she would be just as snooty and rich as the English one. She owns a fucking vineyard in Napa.
Oh,
like
for
record, she's not.
Yeah.
She makes a whole big thing about saying, I'm not from LA. Like they say, do you know movie stars? Or I'm not from Los Angeles, from a different part of California.
Yeah, she's like ride horses Napa, and grow wine. It's a vineyard. Like and she's like, some kind of fucking country bumpkin or some shit. Like,
but they make her out like she's like, she acts like she's from LA. Like, yes. But she would be just as fucking snooty.
Absolutely. She would.
English girl. Like,
absolutely.
No doubt.
She would.
I loved her wine tasting thing when she's,
that was hilarious.
In Britain, that was,
I'm
great.
More partial to a California grape, and they're all like, what the fuck?
Yeah, like what's coming out of your fucking mouth right now? It was like so obvious. I was like, what are you doing? And then it's like, oh, she just wants her mom to know her, and her mom doesn't care about her and never did. Doesn't care about anyone but herself.
That was probably, and I'm going to tell you guys right now, this is where it got real. And this is where I got pissed at the parents. It was no longer like a, what the fuck? This is weird. Like, why would you make this plan? This is when I got legitimately mad at the parents. When she pulls up to the house and says, I really hope she likes me. I'm like, that is so heartbreaking. I can't even begin to fucking tell you guys.
I know.
I was like, Hallie, get back on the fucking airplane and go back to your dad and grab your fucking sister and go start your own life somewhere else. You don't need these ignorant fuckheads.
Fuck your parents. Fuck both
God
of them.
Damn it, dude.
It's just terrible. It's so heartbreaking. And it's like,
I was so mad.
Poor girls don't deserve to have been abandoned by what? Like, they
for
never address
real.
It. They never are like, why didn't you want me? Like, they
no
have
point.
No conversation. None. There's no, none. And it's just like, oh my God.
You know what I'm just not realizing is actually both times that this comes up between Nick and Elizabeth, they're just trying to rationalize to the girls why they did this. They don't say, I'm sorry that we did this to you.
They barely even rationalize. They just are like, well, you know what? We got divorced and we had twins and we decided just to pretend like we like
it. Yeah. It wasn't a thing. And I'm like God
Jesus,
damn you, dude.
Jesus, fuck. The fact that the girls have no questions, they just are so innocently like, I want to know my mom and I want to know my dad. And it's like, but you don't stop to ask for a second why this grown ass adult didn't want to know you. Like, it's so heartbreaking. I cannot. So
like that would have been a nice little like throwaway to say at some point where it's like, I've called to check on Hallie how many times, or to check on Annie how many times, and you didn't even realize that she wasn't there or whatever. Like, you know, whatever, dude. Like, they are out of their lives. 100%. And yeah. Hallie, for her part, shows a lot more parental dependency on her dad because she says when they first meet that they're best friends and they do everything together. And this is yet again another point in the movie where I get really pissed off at Nick specifically. Nick is kind of aloof and he's very like, he wants to just live a chill life and do what he's doing and stuff. If you guys were such good friends, if you guys were that best of friends, you met a woman in 2 months and proposed to her, and that you didn't immediately tell your daughter the fucking instant that she got back in the car, I wouldn't have let that shit go any further than the drive home. There's yeah. no fucking way. And then he doesn't really spend a whole lot of time with her. Just the two of them. The only time that they really are spending time together is the horseback riding scene where he's trying to tell her about Meredith. And to Hallie's fucking, to Hallie's, what's the word I'm looking for? Credit.
Chagrin.
No, oh, to Hallie's credit, or to Annie's credit, rather. She figures out what he's trying to talk to her about almost immediately. And that's why she fucking runs away, which also leads to number one, Chessie revealing or Annie revealing that she's Annie to Chessie, which is, again, the greatest moment in this movie. But it also is followed up by her saying what I can only describe as one of the funniest fucking things a child could ever say to their parent. It's the realest fucking thing ever. Yeah, Dad, I think it's so great. You're going to adopt Meredith. And he's just like, she walks away and he's just like, she thought I was going to adopt her? What the fuck?
Unreal. Like, but it's like, who puts their kid in the car and just like after five seconds, like is like, who introduces their girlfriend and also fiance, and it's been 2 months and she's never met, and they're, yep. Yeah, that's fucking insane. So like,
also Chessie has the measure of Meredith within 10 minutes of Hallie being home. She 100%. Is telling her about it immediately. And I'm like, what the fuck?
100%. But who is like, oh, you just came back from 2 months at camp. Let me introduce you to my girlfriend. She's at the house. Like, that's like yeah. the least tactful. Like,
but not even at the house. She's lounging at the house. She's there yeah. as a publicist who was brought up from San Francisco, who, by the way, I'm going to be very flip-floppy with Meredith. She is an accomplished, established businesswoman. She is very successful on her own. That car is hers. Nick did not buy that. There's nothing in the movie to imply that he bought that for her. She has her own assistant who is as devilishly maniacal as she is because he knows right off the bat that she's being serious about sending the girls to Switzerland for boarding school. He doesn't think anything of it. He's like, damn, dude, she's fucking crazy. What is wild about this is she's basically already moved into the house. She's lounging at the pool. Uh-huh. She's just drinking a fucking martini, which there's alcohol all over the second half of this movie. I just want you guys to know that. It's fucking hilarious. It's
like wild.
But she is lounging at the pool like she fucking owns the place. And it is so irritating to me that Nick does not pick up on this immediately. If not that, then the cherry on top for him to have picked this shit up that he doesn't is when she has the bell to summon Jessie. And it's, she's like, so don't you love it? It's such a big house. And I'm like, that is
so ridiculous.
Oh,
I just like
beat the shit out of her so bad.
We're all over the place. What are we technically still talking about?
You're talking about Hallie right now.
We're not, but okay. let's wrap that up. But the last thing I have on Hallie is just that it's grandfather who discovers her.
Yep.
It's not as emotional as when Chessie meets Annie. But I like how they're both called out by the help or the other, like,
yeah, extended family.
Yeah, not their parents, who are oblivious and negligent.
Yeah. Yeah. I think grandpa knew the whole time. I would be willing to acknowledge that grandpa knew the whole time. I think he had an inkling way before.
Chessie kind of knew the whole time too.
Yeah, especially after the second time after breakfast, I think, is when she was finally like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Like, she's catching on more so than the parents are. But let's talk about Annie then in California. The way she dresses is fucking insane, though. Like, just like this, bonkers. Like the English, like she has a full pantsuit. Like, I just.
She has a kimono later. She has a full kimono later.
She's 11. Like, so I just want to point that out. That, like, I just, Annie is like this posh British thing that, like, people thought English people were like in the
90s. She gets out of the car in fucking stilettos. She gets out of the limo at camp.
There, she's wearing like Mary Janes.
Oh, she's wearing Mary Janes, whatever.
Yeah, she's right. But she is like, it's ridiculous. Annie's also definitely the smarter of the two, right? Like,
yeah.
She's the one who's more tuned into the fact that they must be related. Like,
she's also the first to acknowledge or to like accept it too. Hallie, like, I don't know why, but Hallie fights it the whole time until they show the picture.
Yeah. And like, but Annie, because it's, I think even though they look identical and share a birthday and are missing a parent, it still seems highly improbable to be like, we're sisters. Like, that seems incredibly improbable, but I love Annie's willingness to leap to that conclusion
to and jump be right to like, it. Yeah.
Yeah. Even though it seems crazy still, I like that it's, but you know what? After the poker game that they had, fine. So,
yeah.
And that's kind of all I have on her. We talked about the stuff with Chessie. Like, it's, she's great. They're great.
The one thing with Annie that I will kind of say is she's more worldly intelligent. Hallie is Hallie is street smart. I think Annie is book smart. Hallie is street smart.
Yeah, Annie's definitely more clever, but Hallie is Hallie's more of a troublemaker, right? Hallie's a little bit more. Yeah, she's like
all of her. It's a little less refined. Pranks. Yeah, all of her pranks were like fucked up. They were embarrassing or like dangerous or whatever. Annie was just like, I'm going to put your bed on the roof. So what? Here's the other thing that really fucking irritates me about Annie. Not Annie, it doesn't irritate me, but I'm kind of like, I'm mad for her. And it's another one of those fair weather things. She has friends. Her friends were with her in the cabin when she was playing poker, right? Annie loses this bet and has to skinny dip. And then the girls take her clothes. Where are her fucking friends?
Nowhere to be seen.
Yeah. No one is like, oh my God, we got to get her clothes. Or they took her clothes or whatever. Like, it's not even like we tied your friends up so they couldn't say anything. It just like, God damn it, dude. Camp must suck ass to make friends at.
They just see a fucker over. Yeah. I mean, oh God. I don't know. I made good friends at my camp. You had to have good friends. You had to. Yeah. You had to have people with you to hold your arms up behind you during fascist religious song time.
Yeah, I still can't believe that. That's fucking nuts to me.
I'm not kidding. It was really something.
The other thing I did want to say, it's kind of about Hallie, but she's pretending to be Annie, so we'll keep it there. But of course, we have to do a fucking Beatles homage to Abbey Road.
Of course.
When they're going to, fun fact for you guys though, there is a Beetle parked on the side of the road when they're walking across. So
you just are legally obliged to do the Abbey Road thing anytime that you have a scene in London, despite the fact that Abbey Road is not in fact in London. So there's that.
Boom. Got them, kids.
Yeah. Like
this will lead into the last little part here, which is going to be about Meredith, but in keeping with Annie's intelligence and just her overall cleverness, she immediately figures Meredith out. She got a little bit of help from Chessie, but she's got the measure of Meredith the minute that they talk. And
no, she does. Well, and because Meredith is 26.
She's 26, dude.
She's like not. Like, there's a lot of like, I mean, the Venn diagram of a 26 year old and like a 13 year old is like a circle. So I just, it's like,
They're basically the same people.
Yeah, like it's not hard to see through her, right? And it's funny because you actually would think that Hallie would be more, like you said, like the street smart one to see through her, but Annie sees right through her too. Like there, but I feel like Annie, like, I don't know, she is smart and she, like, she gets what's going on. Like she, Meredith is like glass. She's easy to see through.
Yeah, that's the thing. So this is like, I'm of two minds, and it's because I've been having this conversation all week because I told somebody that, I was doing this episode and we just started talking about, you know, like, Meredith gets a bad rap or whatever. And watching this again after having that conversation with them, I'm kind of like, dude, she sort of does. Like, she's not, obviously she's a gold digger and it's the gold digger trope and whatever, okay?
It's like the first time we've seen that.
Yeah. But yeah,
lots of single parents and divorces, but none of this yet.
Yeah, because Mrs. Doubtfire didn't have that. Stu was wealthy on his own. Stu did nothing wrong.
Even in the Santa Claus, no, Stu did nothing wrong. Even in the Santa Claus, like, there's no, like, of all the bad new spouses and stuff, nobody's a gold digger. This is even the first female new spouse, right?
That we've seen. God, it kind of is. Yeah,
it is. Yeah. So I mean,
we've had Evil Stepmother and all that shit from Disney, but that's totally different than this.
Yeah, this is like, I'm thinking like live action stuff. This is like kind of a first. So
yeah,
it's high to this trope. It's gross and I hate it, but here it is. She's like really overtly a gold digger too. Like, it's not even she like admits it basically. Like,
yeah, the minute that Annie says when they're, so after Nick tells Annie that they're gonna get married, she goes and sits on this fucking dope looking swing. Meredith is like, oh, I'll go talk to her. We're gonna be a family soon, and I have to keep lying to you about how I feel about this girl. So they go and sit down and she's like, hey, you know, divorce can be scary and getting married and, you know, like, you're becoming a woman. And then Annie interrupts her and is like, I don't mean to interrupt the like mushy whatever, but like, I don't need you to explain this. Like, I understand, like, you're young and you're sexy and I see what my dad sees in you or whatever. And immediately Meredith cuts all the bullshit off. She's like, wow, your dad absolutely underestimates you. I adore your father. And then Annie is like, so my father's money has nothing to do with it then. And Meredith says, there's nothing wrong. She doesn't deny it. That's the most important part.
Yeah, she doesn't
deny it. But she says, there's nothing wrong with being young and beautiful, and you're not going to do anything to separate us. We're getting married in 2 days, whether you like it or not.
2 weeks. Two weeks.
That's right. I'm sorry. 2 weeks.
They've known each other for 2 months.
2 months.
And they're going to have a wedding kinda come up a lot. In 2 weeks. And there's no wedding plan beside her, like, randomly, like,
finding Elizabeth and seeing that she found a dress in Vogue. And they're going
to drunkenly begging this designer to make her a dress at the bar. Like, that's the only plan she has for this wedding. It's insane. Yeah. 2 weeks. And she's like, get over it. We're getting married in 2 weeks. Like, excuse?
Like, I know. And I'm just like, are you fucking serious that you guys just think that's okay? But they do, because the parents in this movie are stupid.
It's fucking crazy. It's absolutely crazy. And then
the adults are worse. The parents of the parents are even worse. Because literally, when they're at the hotel waiting for them, Meredith is downstairs with her mom and her dad. And she's like, they'll be here any minute. Now, be nice, daddy. He's everything that you've ever wanted for your little girl, plus millions more. The dad then says, then you know I'll be nice. And they're all like twirling their mustaches, evil fucking wringing their hands and shit. And I'm just like, God damn it.
Literally, the whole family is twirling their mustaches. Yeah. Like, it's insane. It's insane. And then, and I didn't really like have anything particularly intelligent to say about the third act of this, but it is fun. Like, they're all the girls get them together and Meredith's there and they're in the hotel and it's like, which kid is which? And the kids like hold them ransom and are just like, we won't even tell you which one is the right one. And you have to guess and you can't figure it out.
They
both put on the American accent and they're like, fuck you. Like, try to take one of us back to England. Like, I dare you. Like, which one goes back to England? Can you tell? And the parents are like, no, we can't tell because we're terrible parents.
And it just showcases it when Nick thinks he's figured out who the right one is. And then they switch to the British accent and he's like, they're like, it would suck if you sent the wrong kid back to England.
Yeah.
And then he's like, fuck.
Yeah. Like he literally can't tell. That's incredible. And then they go on the camping trip where more mild mischief takes place. Right. Like,
so to start the mischief on the camp though, and I'm sorry, I'm reading the notes from my phone cause I didn't have a chance to read these up, but because we're talking about the camping trip, I do just want to point out that they do a great job of subtly explaining where the girls get their maniacal manipulativeness, like their mischief from. Their mom literally tricks Meredith into going on the camping trip and then bails right before they're about to leave. It was the funniest fucking part of anything that involved them.
It was brilliant, and it was just an amazing, like, unnecessary 20 minutes of this movie that I had nothing but respect for. Just like, this does nothing for anything. Like,
is how we get rid of Meredith.
Which could have been done way more expeditiously, but no, rather, indeed, we go on this like fucking insane camping trip where they just like bully Meredith to death, and the dad is Dennis Quaid's fine with it. Dennis Quaid is just, he's really starting to see Meredith for what she is, and he's just like, oh, I guess my twin kids just bested you again. Whoopsie doo. And she's,
you're gonna attract
like,
every mosquito in the fucking forest with this shit. It's sugar and water. And she's like, I'm going to bed. And he's like, ha ha ha.
It sucks to suck. And it's also like, he obviously likes this stuff and like is,
she's not here for it at all.
How useless and obnoxious she is, that she can't like pull it together to go on a camping trip. Like, she's in rocket shape too. Like, don't tell me that, like,
I know
these 11-year-olds can do this and you can't. Like, just like,
the 11-year-olds, by the way, that are decked out in full camping gear and are not breathing heavy at all. I know.
Oh, no, of course they're fine.
And like, Meredith has nothing but an Evian water bottle and a Coach backpack with nothing in it, by the way. And we know that because they fill it with rocks.
Yeah, literally. And like, also, they have like a full ass air mattress. Like, I just want to point out how much Dennis Quaid is carrying on his back in this scene.
Two tents.
One of them could sleep like four people. Like, as someone who like has backpacked, like, these are not, those are not things that you bring backpacking. And they have this, like, honestly, Dennis Quaid carried so much shit into the wilderness. They must have camped out 50 feet from the fucking car.
Oh, it had to be.
It was a cliff
below their house. Like,
no, like that was, that lake is, there is a parking lot right there. They were walking down the parking lot to like, it was a Dennis Quaid.
There used to be stairs there and there was a landslide and they're going down the way they know.
Unbelievable. So
the one part I did agree with Meredith in this whole fucking camping segment was when she says, and I think I even clapped, but she's like, oh, hiking. I can't believe people do this for fun. And I was like, fucking A, right, Meredith. Who would do that for fun?
It can be fun.
Not with demon children, but
not with the demon children, but in general. Like, I like to hike.
Yeah, that's just, there's like a,
fuck you.
Oh, I'm just like, fuck that, dude. That's the same as people telling me to try kale chips. Like, why do you hate me?
Okay, kale chips is maybe a step too far. Hiking can be nice.
I almost feel bad for her if I wasn't like, you're kind of an ass. You're kind of a bitch.
She is absolutely being like, by the time they have her out on her air mattress in the middle of the lake, it's a little
she's
bit
done.
Like,
she's cut all that shit off.
Why are you not reprimanding your kids? It's like a reasonable question. But then she's like, it's them or me. And he's like, well, fuck you, obviously them, which I'm frankly shocked. Dennis Quaid hasn't chosen his children one day in his life, but apparently, I mean, certainly you would have thought at least he'd be like, well, I'd get rid of Annie, it's fine, but Hallie,
oh my god, he's like, well, I've done it before, I'll just take one.
I'm surprised he didn't, surprised he wasn't like, you know, really only attached to the one, so maybe
Annie, you stay here, I'll send your mom to pick you up.
No, like, shit, like, I was kind of surprised that he so quickly chose both the kids. I thought surely some hesitation, but. But yeah, then she just disappears. Like you said, her car gone.
She throws the ring at him, which that shocked me.
Oh, I know.
Because when I was a kid, I thought she just threw something like a bolt or a nut or something from like the tea kettle that she kicked or something. I didn't know it was the ring. I realized that on this watch. And then we get this like Nick. This just goes back to how stupid they are. Nick is like, or she's like, you didn't come after me. And he's like, I didn't know you wanted me to. And it's like, are you fucking dumb? Are you fucking dumb? You ridiculous. Always go after them. They have one fight.
And two children. I just, it's like, bro, what? I can't reconcile it. And then they end up back together because, of course, they do.
Yeah, that's.
But they try to figure out the split, right? So we're just going to split them up. We're going to go back to our lives, and we're going to have them spend alternating holidays, like with the other.
Yeah,
which honestly, that would have.
Fine, and they have the money to do that. They
should
have done
with both kids. Should have been alternating. Like, I'm sorry. There's no or somebody move. Like, honest to God, like oh my you God, can run your dress company from San Francisco. Like, I understand that the Vineyard can't move, but like, you can run your fucking company from
you
San Francisco.
You could probably be successful in San Francisco as you could be in fucking wherever you are now. There's
it's not
no
London
fucking
and it's not
way.
New York. I understand that, but it is close to LA. Like, honestly, yeah. You couldn't make that work. Like, fuck right off. They are so rich. Yeah. So they're like, we're just going to split the family up. But then because they are so rich, Hallie and Dennis Quaid are able to get back before Annie and what's
her face.
Make
a joke about Concord Air.
They do make a joke about the Concorde, which the Concorde no longer flies, and I never flew on it. But they got there faster because this was the 90s and the Concorde was still flying. So for those who are too young, Concorde was a highly dangerous aircraft that would get you to London in like 3 hours. So
yep,
there you have it. But it's no longer flying. And
for good reason.
Yeah. So they beat them to London, and then they're like, we don't want to lose you again. Like, be married to us again. And then they are, and then the movie ends.
So I just want to point this out again. The parenting decisions here have separated these two girls, right? When they get back together.
And from their other parent.
Yeah. So forever. When they get back together and they've met, and they can't go back to not knowing who the other one is, and now they have to swap fucking holidays and shit. These parents look at each other and go, we're not ruining enough lives. My butler and your nanny have just fallen in love. Let's separate the fuck out of them too.
You're right. Oh my God.
They
are so toxic. They're the worst parents. Okay, look, we've seen some bad parents over the years of doing this podcast.
Looking right at you, buddy.
Oh my God. But yeah, like we have seen some shit.
Yeah.
And this is up there. This has to be, this is on the level.
This is a
of Robin
top
Williams
three.
And
this
Mrs.
is
all fire.
Absolutely. This is Robin
like,
Williams.
It might be worse. Robin Williams. Like this might be worse. I'm actually pretty convinced this is
I would
worse
say this is worse, worse because everything Robin Williams did was for his kids and everything that Nick and Elizabeth did was for them.
He was a despicable husband, but he wasn't
a
passable father.
He's a very good father, yeah.
Yeah, but no, I think this is the worst parenting that we have seen thus far. So,
it so is. God damn it.
I like to give the what the fuck award to these assholes. So anyway.
Fucking raging parents. Nick, the last thing I'll say before we get into the room of requirement is something that Nick says when they're down, when they're having their almost romantic moment in the basement, when you find out that Nick is also a collector of wine. Nick tells her that he has every bottle ever made of the wine that was served on the QE2 on their wedding day. And out loud, I yelled, no, the fuck you don't. That's not physically possible. Also, it's been 11 years, and this thing looks like it's been in the catacombs below France. What the the fuck, dude? Clean up your shit. Let's get into the rumor requirement because I'm fucking heated right now and I haven't eaten all day.
Oh my God. Yeah, tell me all the things.
And some fun shit. So attack, this actually is pretty funny because when I mentioned earlier the cabin stuff, there was a lot of dangerous shit that happened in there, especially but not limited to the water bottles. Or not the water bottles, the water balloons. The water balloons, Scott. The water balloons, audience. The
water balloons.
Attack had to be secured at the top of Lindsay Lohan's hair during the infamous massive water balloon drop, as it was so large that if it did not burst when it hit her in the head, could cause serious and in some ways life-altering damage to her neck.
The attack must have been big to like guarantee yeah. that it hit it, that like it didn't. Because, yeah, it is a pretty big water balloon.
It's fucking nuts. It took 17 tries for Lindsay Lohan to step in the honey because, and I quote, the honey wasn't going between her toes correctly.
Oh my God.
Yeah. The lizard that crawls into Meredith's mouth was a combination of both a real lizard, animatronics, a toy, and CGI. And obviously the CGI is when it goes into her mouth because you can't make a lizard do that shit.
Yeah,
this one's awesome, and it is a great connection to fucking to Mrs. Doubtfire. Originally, Mara Wilson was part of the short list of child actresses, but was ultimately passed over because she would have appeared too young at the time of filming, which I fully agree with because she is barely coming off of Matilda at this point.
Yeah, she was wicked, wicked young.
She was also only 5 years old in Mrs. Doubtfire, which would have put her at maybe 10, 9 or 10 for this.
And how old was Lindsay Lohan?
She was 10.
She was only 10. Wow.
Actually, she might have been 11 or 12.
A real choice was made here on the Olsen twins.
Seriously. But
they weren't the Olsen twins born in 87?
Yes, they were. They're a year older than I am.
Yeah, they're my same age. Like they would have been like 11. Like they yep. A decision was made here, folks.
It absolutely was. It's kind of heartbreaking if you really think about it. Other notable young actresses that were considered for the role at the time include Scarlett Johansson, Michelle Trachtenberg, who those of you will know as Harriet the Spy, or the older daughter from 17 Again, and Tina Majorino, who plays Deb from Napoleon Dynamite. There's a bunch of like random shit. Like the boy who accidentally gets sent to summer camp is Lindsay Lohan's older brother, Michael.
Randomly, also, there's other boys in other scenes at summer camp that aren't.
Yeah. Him,
and it's just not addressed. It's like you get this like running joke of the one boy who's like finds himself at girl camp.
Yeah.
But there are other boys there.
And there are tons of other guys there.
Shoes. It's so.
What the fuck?
It's the weirdest continuity error ever. Like, it's like. So I don't know what
it's not even subtle either. It's like when they're eating food or like they're fucking doing shit. Yeah, it's fucking crazy.
It's all over the movie. It was wild.
We did kind of mention it, and it is literally some of the funniest shit in this whole fucking movie. This is one of the only Disney films of its time to openly show not only smoking, but drunken characters and do its job to point that shit out.
Yeah, it's not like, oh, we saw drinking in this. Like, we've seen in a lot of animated movies.
Yeah, it's not like sipping a martini or pouring some wine or whatever.
Or even like Dumbo gets fucked up. I know we didn't review Dumbo, yeah, pink elephants. Like there's lots of scenes that we've talked, I think in Pinocchio, we've talked about alcohol in Disney a lot where they are drinking and they look drunk, but they don't say it out loud. But yeah, in this one, she's like at the bar, like, I'm shit tanked.
Bro, she's fucking obliterated.
It was hilarious.
The fucking bar. That's my favorite scene in this whole movie. Really is funny, she's just yeah. She looks like a fish gasping for air on the this side of this bar. This
is
a
true like family movie, right? Like this is mm-hmm. for everybody. Yeah. Like it wasn't inappropriate, but it was not for
at
kids,
no point
right?
was I ever so like, I don't know about that.
It had something for everyone and like not in a like secretly, oh, you could enjoy this in an adult way, but like you're intended to. Here it is. Yeah. Like she's, you know, like it's it was a true family movie. That genre is kind of dead. Like it's everything's for so particularly.
It's one or the other now. Like and yeah. like Natasha Richardson does such a great job of being drunk. She trips falling into the she trips walking into the elevator. She trips trying to open the door again because she forgot her bag. She forgets that she's wearing, or that it's a completely different kid now wearing a totally different jacket. She's still drinking.
How the twins are like switching. But they're both wearing the same color, but they're wearing different outfits and both different the parents style, are like,
yeah.
What did you, what's,
nice. Yeah, she's like, I love that jacket. Were you wearing that earlier? Like, that's great or whatever.
You,
like,
you look awesome.
And like when they get to the hotel, Martin, by the way, Martin is another one of my favorite fucking people in this movie.
Martin's the best. Yeah.
He opens the door for her and she puts her leg in his hand and he's like, other end, madam. And she comes out drinking. She has one shoe on and she comes out drinking a mini bottle of vodka that she just haphazardly throws over her back and he has to catch. And she's like, I love that fight. That was so quick. And he's like, I've never seen you so spirited before, mom. And she's like, well, would you know I've never had vodka before?
Unreal. Like, she's like, I've never drank, but now seems like a great time.
A great time.
Just get tanked. Like, yeah. Good for her. Good for
her. By the way, the smoking is, for those of you who forgot, the smoking is when they're planning, they're packing to go to the trip, and she is chain smoking.
Yeah, she randomly picks up chain smoking in the house. It's amazing because it's pre-smoking ban. So she just like, God. That was the most realistic thing I've ever seen in my life, though, where you just are like, you've, that's what being quit with heavy air quotes looks like, where you can like quit for like long periods of time, but like the second something goes wrong, you're immediately smoking again. I call that the Carrie Bradshaw.
Absolutely.
I could not do that, listeners. That's not my
Nope. And I'm proud of you for staying where you are.
No, I have to quit. I can't quit. I have to
I can't quit.
I can't like I quit. Like, no, I had to quit. I had to, it's terrible. I'm jealous of all of you who can pretend not to be smokers for like years at a time. I have to actually not smoke. Yeah, but this woman, she has quit. And so she's like smoking in her closet. But the other smoking is grandfather. Grandfather smokes a pipe.
Yeah, he has a pipe and we address it. We only see it when she first gets there.
Yeah, it's like one time.
He puts it down, and then she's like, "You smelled like peppermint and pipe tobacco."
And pipe tobacco. Yeah, I think if it wasn't for the fact that she says the word tobacco, in that scene, and for the scene with the mom smoking cigs, if it was just grandfather happened to hold a pipe, I bet you we wouldn't have a warning. I bet you.
You know what? Actually, I know we wouldn't, because 101 Dalmatians doesn't have a smoking. Yes, it does. Well, yes, but it has a smoking warning because of Cruella. But
everybody in that movie smoked. Because you're not thinking of Dalmatians, you're thinking of something else. But there was another one wherein
Little Mermaid
were smoking a pipe and nobody gave a shit. No, they don't smoke it in Little Mermaid. It's just full of seaweed. There's no smoke.
Fuck.
There is. I think it's another live action. I don't know, but in any case, I think it's the cigarette that is the warning, not the pipe. Fact that they say the word tobacco, I do think that probably like doesn't help. But in any case, no one cares about the tobacco warning. It's not a big deal.
It's a shit.
But for sure, she picked up smoking again in the closet, which I enjoyed. I love that they just don't mention it. She's just like, like we smoke it again.
The minute that she understands the prospect of seeing Nick Parker again, she's like, I need you to go to the drugstore.
I will quit. After this,
it's just a one-time thing. It's helping me with stress.
I quit.
And then she can't drink. She can't smoke on the plane, as federal regulations prohibit you from smoking on the plane.
Born in the wrong fucking generation. I would have loved to have been born when it was like fine to smoke because nobody knew any fucking better and you could smoke on the plane and like it was just fine. You could smoke everywhere.
It was fucking wild. It was the Wild West of tobacco. The last one I'm going to hit you guys with is Joanna Barnes, who plays Meredith's mother, Vicky, was the evil girlfriend in the original 1961 Parent Trap. Her name was also Vicky in that film and has led several fans to believe that the films take place in the same universe and Vicky just got fucked over twice.
Hilarious.
I agree, but what I don't think we're going to agree on here is what to give this.
7.5.
Ooh. Okay. I gave it a 7.9. That's closer than I thought, dude. And the reason I genuinely thought this was going to be almost a 9.
No, it's not that good. It is perfectly watchable. It's highly watchable. It's one of the more watchable live action movies, honestly, that we've done. Like, it's good. It is good. It is good. But
I take great issue with a lot of the camp stuff and the parental choices.
It's just a little bit like,
yeah,
what the fuck the whole time. But it's incredibly watchable. Lindsay Lohan makes this movie.
Like, absolutely.
She's so good. I can't absolutely wait to see Girls. That's on the timeline, right?
It's absolutely on there, yeah. And I say that knowing that there's shit on there that isn't on there. Like, I had to add The Matrix the other day, and Matt and I were both just like, what the fuck?
The ways I might not even, I'm like, I might just leave you guys to it. I'm like,
ugh. No, I know. And that's, I think that's why it wasn't on there.
It might be. Honestly, stuff that makes me go, ugh, might just not be on the timeline. Like, we have to revisit some shit. But anyway,
as always, thank you all so much for joining us tonight. We hope you enjoyed yourselves and maybe even learned something. I know I did about camp and the UK and all that shit.
Camp.
For real, about camp and having fun and Lindsay's terrible camp adventures and all that shit. Join us next week for our first Request the Timeline of season 4, which we will be covering Ever After, as requested by our favorite listener, Nicole, because all of our listeners are our favorite listeners.
That's correct. And Nicole requested this like ages ago, but it wasn't so long ago that we didn't just put it where it belongs in the timeline. So we're finally getting around to this request. So, and I'm pretty excited about it because, like, honestly, it would be a shame to get through the 90s without some Drew Barrymore. So
I agree, especially if we're not going to be doing like 2000 shit with her. Like, was it Fever Pitch, Charlie's Angels? I think we should do Charlie's Angels, but
I don't know that you want to listen to what I have to say about that. I can't imagine it's positive. I haven't seen that movie in 20 years, and I can't imagine it's positive.
Now we have to do it.
You know what I would do, though, because I secretly love it.
Never Been Kissed?
No, I mean that too. But no. But I was going to say, there are two Drew Barrymore movies that I
love. Oh, God.
That I
50 First Dates.
50 First Dates.
50 First Dates.
And one that hasn't actually, I would be willing to do this as a versus.
Oh, God.
Because they're low-key close enough. 50 First Dates and The Wedding Singer.
Oh, I'm down. I'm so fucking down. It's stupid.
Can we do that for like next Valentine's Day as a versus? Can we do that next year at Valentine's? I would love that for the versus because like, I loved those movies. And they're both, of course, Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore. So
absolutely.
I would happily do a versus of those two.
I'm 100% here for that shit. By the way, guys, we haven't seen Drew Barrymore since E.T. So this is going to be a great glow up for her.
Let's do all kinds of Drew Barrymore stuff. Let's do that versus sooner. Let's come up with some fucking random holiday where we can do that's not Valentine's Day that we can do that one.
By the way, if you guys forgot, the versus thing, we're starting in Earth Day.
At Earth Day, Earth Day versus Armageddon versus Deep Impact.
Yeah, this is, God.
That one's by request as well.
Yeah, it was.
Well, okay, not quite. The request was for like either of those movies.
For Deep Impact. We turned it
into a versus for Earth Day. So anyway.
You guys are insane with your requests right now. But anyway, let's get us out of here. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen to the podcast, as well as follow us on all of our social media. You can find the links to our sites and social media in the episode descriptions, where you can find out, excuse me, I'm sorry. If you'd like to support the podcast, we encourage you to follow us on our Patreon, where you can find all of our show notes for each episode. Make sure to check out our website for all of our timeline goodies, including Request the Timeline. You guys let us know what you want to watch and we'll make it happen. But until next time, I'm so good at this, dude. I haven't eaten all day.
Until next time, stay nerdy.
Woo!